From KLW in San Francisco, I'm Max Jacobs, and this is Liner Notes. There Will Be No Apocalypse by Oakland band Fleshies, my guest today on Liner Notes. Fleshies came onto the scene in the late 90s with a reputation for insane live performances, and in their earlier days, sometimes playing over 100 shows a year worldwide. Many of their releases have been put out by the Alternative Tentacles label, run by former Dead Kennedy singer Jello Biafra. They draw influences from all over the place, but they have a special affinity for the punk scene here in the Bay Area, from the 80s and 90s. Like the short-lived but memorable East Bay band, Blatz.
All the lyrics are, you know, I wish California without any warning would go and start a burning tonight. I wish California would fall in the ocean and everyone would die. It's just distilled. It's the distilled essence of, like,
What I have always loved about Fleshy's music is their ability to express that frustration at feeling like you are just a small piece of the puzzle, while vowing to not let that fact stop you from disturbing the order of things.
Knowing that that, like, weird, tiny outsider speck can sometimes just punctuate a whole equilibrium and just, I guess is kind of like a driving force for a lot of what we did. I mean, because it isn't necessarily about succeeding, per se, or about, like, glorifying yourself. It's about making a really, really big mess.
We'll get to that and some great, great records. But first, let's hear the rest of this one from their 2002 album, The Sicilian. Welcome back to Liner Notes on KALW. I'm Max Jacobs, and I am excited to welcome into the studio John Noe from the East Bay punk band Fleshies. How's it going?
Good, good, real good.
Yeah, thanks for making the trek over the bridge.
Happy to do it.
So, Fleshies has been around now for, is it 16 years?
1999, so yep, 16 years.
Yeah, and it's 5 members total.
Yes, yeah. It can finally drive.
So how did Fleshies get started in the first place?
Well, in 99, we were all kind of coming out from, originally from, like, sort of further corners of the Bay Area, far reaches of the East Bay, and in Vaughn's case from San Francisco, and then also south from, like, Palo Alto and Santa Cruz and stuff. And we were from these disparate suburbs, so we had this kind of common experience where we weren't necessarily from the urban core where a lot of the hip bands were at. We knew about all the bands because everybody was aware of music, but we were kind of, you know, from some awkward places around the area, like Benicia. Hamiltron was from Benicia. I was from Pinole and, like, El Sobrante area. I grew up in El Sobrante, and Matt was from Castro Valley and San Leandro area. So, and Vaughn was from, like, Palo Alto a lot. Most of his childhood. And so there was this very different, you know, kind of a different perspective than people who might have actually, like, grown up in Oakland or San Francisco. And so those guys were, me and Vaughn had formed a band a few years before. And
what does Vaughn play?
Vaughn plays bass.
Okay.
So he had formed a band a few years earlier with me, and that band had kind of fallen apart, but we knew we wanted to play music together again. I had called him from Florida when I was in my band Harbinger and said, "Hey man, we got to play music again." And
you were singing in that band too?
Harbinger was playing bass.
Okay.
And backup vocals. But we ended up reconnecting. We got back, and we always knew we wanted to be in a band called Fleshies. And it was pretty, It just made sense. We liked the name. It was weird, kind of gory, strange. And so we ended up doing a thing where we looked for people to play with. I knew he was going to play bass. I was going to sing. We started writing some songs. Mainly at that point, they were based around being drunk and for me for telemarketing, because I was telemarketing. So they all, and they originally, all the songs had titles like, what were they? There was I'm Going to Have to Pass. And there was Interrupting a Murder. That was a classy one. What else was there? There was, there were so many of them. Just a bunch of ridiculous titles around telemarketing. And so the first bunch of songs were like that. And so we ended up, through a convoluted process and trying a few people out, we ended up playing with Hamiltron, who's from Benicia, and I had met him at a really random holiday party that Billy Joe Armstrong from Green Day was having, where he invited all the kind of like extended Green Day network of people who were basically weirdos and, you know, kind of social rejects from various corners of the East Bay that they felt affinities with, because they were also from Pinole and also Granny.
Yeah. Were they big at that point?
Oh yeah, they were, you know, already Green Day. They were, you know, already the thing that they are. So, I mean, it was the Brazil Room in Tilden Park, and it was fun. It was a fun party. I talked to Brian Hamiltron about playing some music at some point, and so we ended up, you know, agreeing to do that. And so we ended up playing in this band, and Matador, he was actually a random punk guy that we knew as friends with a really good friend of mine, Mikey. And he played in this band called Dickie Friedrich and the Patriots, although I'm not supposed to say that because... Actually, neither of them play in that band. That's a secret. That's never... those are secret identities. So I promise you, on pain of death and them murdering me, the actual members of Dickie Friedrich and the Patriots, neither Matt nor Mikey are in Dickie Friedrich and the Patriots.
All right. It's on the record.
It's on the record. However, this known associate of Dickie Friedrich and the Patriots was Matador, and he ended up playing guitar, and he had a lot of songs of his own that were really great. And... yeah, we just ended up writing like 60 songs within a couple months. And geez, I think within 2 years, we had 120 or something like that.
I wanted to, well, we always on this show like to start out by sort of starting at the beginning with with an artist's musical influence. And so I'd asked about a childhood song that was influential to you, and you brought in the song, and I'm going to butcher the name, El Pueblo Unido Jamás Será Vencido. The people united will never be defeated. Mm-hmm. And this is performed by...
Kia Payun.
And Victor Jara as well, though I believe on this recording, not with Victor Jara.
Right. I think it's Kia Payun, but I mean, honestly, like, I had a tape of it when I was a kid that so go on, sorry.
Yeah, no, I just want to know about discovering that it was your parents that introduced you to that.
Yeah, yeah. I had... my father was a Oakland Public Unified school teacher and ex-communist, still a socialist, got disillusioned with communism, with Stalin. He was older. He had me pretty late in life. And so he was very left. And my mom had some pretty left leanings as well. And so they had a lot, you know, when I was growing up, there's a lot of protest music around the house. And like, I would go to a lot of, you know, I was a pretty East Bay kid. We went to a lot of protests, like nuclear freeze, anti-apartheid, anti-police brutality, all kinds of stuff that was happening at the time that was really important in the 80s. And my dad he had this tape of them. My mom really loved it too, because she was really into folk music, and it's basically folk music. But it's a
Chilean song.
It's a Chilean song. And it kind of ended up being like the Internacional for the new, the new Chilean song movement and like kind of newer revolutionary movements around the world, especially post-colonial kind of contexts. And so, it was a socialist song written during the whole ascendancy of Allende, because Kia Payun was like very much tied in with that, and Victor Jara as well, who was later killed under the Pinochet regime. following the coup. And so they actually had to, and the rest of the band actually had to flee to France. A lot of that band had to go into exile in France because they were so closely tied in with the leftist movement. So I always, it's just a beautiful, haunting piece of music, and I always found it really powerful as a kid. Also, having the context explained to me, and it's like, oh yeah, by the way, son, all the people who wrote this are probably dead. Some of them were assassinated. It's like, wow, okay, music can really affect people.
Patria vencerá y ahora el pueblo que se alza en la lucha con voz de gigante gritando adelante el pueblo unido jamás será vencido el pueblo unido jamás será vencido la patria está forjando la unidad de norte a sur gritando adelante el pueblo unido jamás será vencido el pueblo unido jamás será vencido
I wanted to ask you, John, about the first punk song that you heard, and it was a Devo song, which I thought was great.
Mm-hmm.
When you heard this, and this song is Gates of Steel, did you think of this as, oh, well, this is another song, just another piece of music that I really enjoy? Or was there, did it stick out as like, this is something different?
You know, it's interesting with that particular song. I had heard Whip It first, like, you know, everybody my age did, you know, because
I think
like
it's their most popular song.
Yeah, it's like the big pop hit. I was a little kid. It was super wacky. It was really weird. I found the video super weird and really entertaining. It was probably one of the most entertaining things on MTV when I was, you know, 8 or whatever, 7. And then I heard, like, you know, then Gates of Steel came out as a single, and I had heard that. I think that these had come out before, you know, I mean, really, I just heard them on MTV. So I think that I had heard these, like, it's, you know, when you're that young, hearing them, you know, you don't really know the sequence of when they were released, but I think I had heard it, like them around the same time, and Gates of Steel was definitely second. And I remember thinking like, wow, this is like, even as a little kid, I was like, oh, this is which, like, not as wacky. It's way more like normal song. But I just remember there's something about it that was, that almost like reminded me of like Quilapayún. You know what I mean? Like, it was like more this sort of, there was like a protest quality to it. And there was a quality of like fury and this, this sort of, euphoric fight. I guess that's the way I can think of it. Like, I mean, it, it really had, it was anthemic and it was obviously, kind of cynical and fed up with something and a little bit, you know, hung up on the futility of the fight, but also still fighting, even though it knows that it's, you know, going to punch the walls until its fists bleed, but they'll keep twisting away at the gates of steel, you know, because that's what they do. And so it's just, it, I remember it being really inspirational to me. It was like, I mean, I don't think I heard anything that was lyrically reminded me of it until I started hearing like Black Flag later and stuff and hearing like, you know, they hate us, we hate them, we can't win, no way, kind of stuff like that. It's like, but it's, I don't know how that stuff can be inspirational and so almost depressing at the same time. But that's punk, I guess.
This is Liner Notes, I'm Max Jacobs. You're hearing the end of Gates of Steel by Devo. My guest, singer John No from the punk band Fleshies, chose this track for us. Let's hear another one of theirs. This song is from 2001, and it's called Yes, I'm Starting Sh*t. You're listening to Liner Notes on KALW San Francisco. It's interesting. You mentioned that your dad had some pretty left leanings. Well, both of your parents did, actually.
Yeah.
I'm curious how they thought of some of the music that you have put out that's been more political.
Well, my mom died when I was 17, so she wasn't particularly, she didn't really get to, you know, experience me making much music. I mean, my first band had been doing some demos and stuff up till that, but nothing of note. And my dad was always really supportive. He saw punk as, you know, a manifestation of radical culture that he was familiar with. He liked Jell-O. I mean, I'd always give him like Jell-O's spoken word CDs and stuff. He was familiar with him from the 70s and San Francisco radical politics and stuff. And he just was aware of punk being at least, you know, the more intelligent corners of punk, because there's definitely different subgenres of punk. The more intelligent, smart punk stuff and political punk stuff being, you know, a continuation of radical concepts from the actual radicals in the 60s, not necessarily the hippies, but more the actual radicals, mm-hmm. and, you know, everything going back to like the, you know, the Beats and stuff of that era, because that was his kind of period. So he liked a lot of it. He would definitely roll his eyes at the more stupid stuff, but, you know, I mean, hey, you know, if you can't annoy your parents with your music a little bit, I mean, what's the point?
You have to rebel sometime, right?
Yeah, right. Even when your dad is like, you know, super inclusive. I mean, I know it's pretty similar with the other guys in the band too. Brian's dad, you know, I mean, in a lot of ways, Fleshies is a rock and like a just really highly charged rock and roll band. I mean, it's just kind of really, we unabashedly love, you know, rock music and punk, and like we sometimes would just play rock so hard and fast and minimalistically that it would just end up being like punk, even though we're basically playing a, you know, like Deep Purple riff or something, you know. So it's just this kind of thing where it's you know, their parents also liked a lot of it, because they like, you know, some of them liked the riffs, and like Brian Hamilton's dad liked the lyrics and the ideas, and I think Matt's dad and Vaughn's parents were super radical weirdos, and I don't think Plaskett's parents are much into it, but that's a whole different set of circumstances.
Well, that kind of brings us to the next song that you brought in by Gang of Four. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is a song from 1979, from the British post-punk, whatever you want to call it.
Sure, yeah, first
band.
Wave post-punk.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But it's a pretty interesting political song. I mean, there's, you know, there's aspects of feminism in it and situationism. I mean, they, mm-hmm. you know, they were touching on Marxism as well. I mean, their
oh,
name
yeah.
coming from that too.
Yeah, absolutely.
How old were you when you heard this song?
Oh, geez, I didn't hear Gang of Four until I was, well, okay. I heard it. I heard actually this song when I was 16, when my cool punk cousin would make me mixtapes.
Literal mixtapes.
Really old, good old mixtapes, killer mixtapes with all these bands that I actually desperately looked around to find and couldn't find anything else by them until later, because most of the stuff was out of print in like, you know, the early 90s, and didn't come back into print until later. And of course, everything's available now instantly whenever you want it. But yeah. Like, you know, I had to really dig around for some of this stuff. So I didn't actually find the Gang of Four record again until, I think I was probably 22. So 21 or 22. So yeah, I really loved the stuff that I heard on the mixtape, though, like this song. Yeah.
And the album is Entertainment. That this
yeah,
one
that's
came
the
up
with. That's the best one. I get a little disco-y after that. I'm pretty into the Entertainment's the minimalist, like the really like sharp minimalist post-punk mm-hmm. classic, mm-hmm. I think.
I found that Essence Rare by Gang of Four here on Liner Notes. My name is Max Jacobs, and I've been speaking with lead singer John No of the Oakland band Fleshies. You mentioned that you would like to play the song Jumpers when we're kind of digging into some of the more lyrical songs, some of the more controversial songs, perhaps. Mm-hmm. Is there a story behind that song?
Yeah, Jumpers. So Jumpers is from The Sicilian, which was our second album. We were in a very, an interesting state of mind because we had been on tour almost continuously since 2000, basically. And it really ramped up when we put out Kill the Dreamer's Dream in 2001. And then by the time Sicilian came out in 2003, we were kind of experiencing a certain amount of like intense fatigue and different mental problems that were multiplying from, you know, playing 150 or 160 shows a year, you know? And, so when we did the tour, like with the Sicilian, it also came out in an environment that was very much, informed by 9/11, because we were on our way to New York when 9/11 happened. And we were driving from Asheville, heading on our way to New York to play a festival up there. And, we were listening to the radio. It was, you know, in the morning. It was when it happened. And we heard the radio broadcasts on NPR of it happening live. We heard on the radio when the second tower fell or was struck by the plane and then fell. And that's when things started to turn. And, you know, we were freaking out a little bit. Obviously, we were heading to New York. And obviously we had some radical politics in the band, but, we also are well knowledgeable enough to know that, you know, the 3,000 people that died in those towers are probably mostly janitors and really low level functionaries, people who are not oligarchs, you know, I mean, it was a terrible thing. And we also knew oh, wow, things are about to get very, very dark. And so that album was written under that circumstance. The song Jumpers was actually written, following all this touring and a bout of homelessness that, a couple of us had experienced, including myself, and some kind of intense life changes and intense societal changes. And it was kind of based on a short story by Joan Didion called Jumpers. I think it's from the White Album. Yeah, it's from the White Album. And it's sort of taking it was talking about her observations of watching window washers jump and other business people jump from the building that she worked in, the high rise she worked in New York, where she went to see her publisher. And they would just see people jumping sometimes because I think it was during another time of strong economic malaise. It was during the 70s kind of economic crisis. And I was just thinking about how obviously we had the strong images of what we saw from people falling from the World Trade Center and jumping from the World Trade Center. And I was thinking about how much of a sinking ship and an extreme circumstance would drive people to do that kind of jump from a obvious literal burning building, but also what about the burning building of our actual society and our institutions and the whole structure of what, kind of freedoms we had left that were very, very quickly being taken from us. What point would a person jump?
Yeah.
I'm sitting here with John No of the East Bay punk band Fleshies. I'm Max Jacobs. Another song you brought in, Red Riding Hood by the Grups, early 90s East Bay band. I'm wondering if you can kind of describe that band for me, but also talk a little more about that scene.
Yeah.
Because they're really, I mean, members of this band went on to form other bands. I think there was somebody that was in Rancid from this band.
Oh, yeah, for sure. He was already in that, I think.
It was a very, like, rich time for that music, it seemed like.
Totally. My favorite band in high school was Blatz. That was pretty much, you know, bar none, my favorite band in high school. And they were a local punk band. I mean, a lot of people know them, but half of Blatz ended up in the Grups, or like, I guess, two-fifths ended up in the Grups. Jesse and Anna, who were two of the primary vocalists in Blatz.
Is that Jesse Luscious?
Jesse Luscious, yeah. And Anna, who was like the wild, awesome poet, amazing front lady person. And Blatz was just one of my favorite bands, and I really liked Grups too, because I felt like it was in a lot of ways a continuation of Blatz, although it was more tight musically, and it lacked some of like the chaos of Blatz, which was like part of the glory of it, which is also partially why it broke up after only a few years. I went to high school with Eggplant, and ended up, who was the guitar player, I wrote a lot of the songs, and I played in a band called Harbinger with him in like 1997. But Grups were great, and I just really liked how much Anna's lyrics developed and how much they brought to the fore, and how they got into some really heavy feminist themes and really heavy like psychological themes. Just really, really good stuff. She's a professor of English at San Diego State now and writes books.
Well, it was a pretty awesome beginning to that.
Yeah.
Well, let's hear the song Red Riding Hood by the Grups.
I had good intentions. It was one of the last times I was going to get to see my grandmother, who was bleeding at the tumor. Unable to even go play bingo at the reservation because the therapy made her 2 weeks to walk. And they never give her enough morphine and time to end the pain for real. So before she dies, I'm going to let her know that I'm all grown up and tell her that I love her before she stops recognizing.
So we just heard a little bit of the band, the Grups, there.
Yeah.
And And I wanted to stick with the you know, late 80s, early 90s punk scene for another second. We talked about Blatt, so I figured we should play, you brought in one of their songs.
Oh, yeah,
as
yeah.
well, California.
Classic.
This was, some of these songs that you brought in, like, this is really what I was kind of envisioning. I can really, like, see Fleshy's kind of, like, growing up on some of this music, like, especially the raw energy, and having seen your band live several times, you know, I get a sense of that, like, that energy and that raw noise.
Well, speaking for myself, I sure was influenced by Blatt's. And one of the, I mean, the rest of the guys are influenced by a whole variety of stuff and a whole bunch of different punk. You know, and one thing I'll say about, like, Blatt's, as far as, like, the kind of broader East Bay scene at the time, there were some really amazing bands from that. You know, Blatt's, Spit Boy. I mean, obviously the Grups after Blatt's. There was, like, Econo Christ, Filth, like some really, really great bands that were definitely on the, that became very legendary, but were also like on the outside of what was the big pop punk explosion of the time. Some of those bands were great, really great yeah. too.
What do you consider who falls into the pop punk explosion?
Well, you know, I mean, you had Jawbreaker, you had Green Day, you had Mr. T Experience,
Rancid,
all these bands that, you know, Operation Ivy, you know, the different members in Rancid and stuff. And, that stuff was really important and really good too. And this kind of darker side of the East Bay punk stuff really appealed to me as a kid because it was so, like, gnarly. I mean, it was really, really visceral and heavy and strange. And I liked a lot of the pop punk stuff too. You know, I mean, it was my local scene and I knew a lot of people and they were sweethearts and, like, really fun. But I was kind of young. I mean, I was like 3 years younger, 4 years younger than a lot of the, you know, even the younger people in these different bands. And so, like, I kind of, my context was not, it was sort of divorced from what ended up happening, where people, like, a lot of these bands, you know, they kind of exploded outward after that scene blew up. And so I wasn't around during that. So my whole take on this stuff has always been DIY and, like, dingy and underground and dirty, doing it, you know, like, without any expectations. And Blatt's, I think, was a band that really encapsulated the whole, like, not necessarily having any expectations other than just pure weirdo expression and visceral explosiveness. I mean, they just, it's just a total outlet and, like, a total raw experience.
Sometimes I get the impression I'm better off not dealing with people. It's a real pain in the ass being human. Sometimes I get the impression I'm better off not dealing with people. It's a real pain in the ass being human.
This is Liner Notes on KALW. I'm Max Jacobs. My guest is the lead singer from the band Fleshies. We've been talking about the Bay Area punk scene, in particular the band Blatz, whose song California we just heard.
It was definitely not geared up to, you know, cross over into some sort of mainstream success.
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because I was sort of reminiscing about, with a friend actually, about when we saw Fleshies for the first time. It must have been 2002 at the Capitol Garage in Sacramento, the old Capitol Garage.
Yeah, yeah, it was
fun. I think we were 17, and this was kind of at the time when there were some of these bands like The Strokes and even to some extent like The White Stripes.
Right, The Hives.
Music that was coming into the mainstream that was definitely reviving some of this old punk, old power pop, however you want to classify it, you know.
Yep.
But then we see Fleshies, and it was like so refreshing to see like that raw energy channeled again, and not just, I mean, we listen to that music too, but
sure.
Yeah, like The Strokes lead singer isn't gonna take all his clothes off and jump into the audience.
We were way too dirty for that stuff. We were just like, I don't know. I guess the reality is that we didn't know how to do anything like that. Like, the immediate context of Fleshies, like, obviously I grew up with a lot of the East Bay stuff. The other guys knew about it, but they had their own context. Like, Vaughn was really into Flipper and stuff, and like, they were all into different branches of punk. Brian Hamiltron was in Benicia, into a lot of the Benicia stuff, but also into like some of the weirder like shoegaze stuff and like kind of post-punk and Jesus Lizard and all those kinds of things. And Matt was into all kinds of bizarre music and metal and like a lot of weird suburban outsider music. And we really came together over the Mission District scene in San Francisco with Hickey and 50 Million and shows at 17th and Cap and Mission Records and like all these just really Lost Goat, all these really great bands from this totally often overlooked incredible explosion of music and weirdo stuff happening in San Francisco from like 94 to 98, 99, and actually continued on with Mission Records through like 2001, 2002. And, you know, you'd still find it today at Thrill House and places like that. But, I mean, so we were kind of out of this really, like, this basement punk, DIY tradition, really visceral, dirty, weird music. Buttle Surfers, even, you know, like, prior to them sounding like Beck, you know, when, like, they were a really abrasive, weird band. And we also like melodies, you know, but we threw them in there with a bunch of weird stuff. And I think even if we had... Maybe there were times we might have even been trying to see whether we could do something at a different level, but I don't think that we were built for it.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we got asked to play the Fillmore, and they said, okay, you're going to be playing the show at, like, Sleepy Time Gorilla Museum, and I think, like, NoFX or something, and, like, some local, you know, like, local headliners showcase type thing, and we're like, cool, sure, why not? You know, I mean, we'd done all these weird shows. We played with, like, Queens of the Stone Age, like, a month before and terrified their audience and just, like, a bunch of stuff like that. But, you know, they said, yeah, so, you know, you just have to not be playing shows for 2 weeks before and after. And we're like, well, we're playing at Mission Records with our friends of Stranger Steels from Arkansas and, you know, Jack Palance band from Chattanooga, our close friends. Of course we're going to play that show. They're like, well, you can't play here. They're like, well, that's fine. We'll just play the Mission Records show. So, I mean, you know, I guess so much for the Fillmore.
So you didn't play the Fillmore.
No, I didn't play the Fillmore. Because we're not going to cancel on our friends at Mission Records. That's just stupid.
Well, on that note, let's hear another track from Fleshies off of your most recent album, Brown Flag. This one's called Onion of My Eye.
I take my teeth and I wanna fight it now.
we're almost out of time here on Liner Notes, but we're going to hear one more song by Fleshies and a track they've chosen by the band Hickey. It's so easy with punk music, I feel, to go back to like teenage days and think about how much that music, how easy it was to identify with it. And as I think, as I mentioned before, I first discovered Fleshies music, I must have been 17. And the song I wanted to play specifically was Big Green Teeth off your album Kill the Dreamer's Dream. The chorus of the song, I may be small, I may be insignificant, or I may seem small, mm-hmm. I may seem insignificant, but I've already f***ed up. Mm-hmm. That to me, as like a disillusioned, you know, cynical, totally disenfranchised teenager, like that was, I feel like for many years that line just stuck out for me.
Glad you connected.
Yeah,
that's a Matador classic right there. He has a knack for getting some of those phrasings down. We had a lot of collaborative lyrics with this band. Like mm-hmm. everybody kicked in on the lyrics.
Yeah,
and that was a really good one of his.
Was there a specific moment that inspired that song?
This
would have been 2002.
That was a 2001 one. It was on Kill the Dreamer's Dream, and we had actually had it since pretty early in the band. It was one of the songs that Matt had kind of written early on with the band. And I mean, it's hard to speak for him on this, but I've talked to him about it. And in terms of my own inspiration, how I feel it, and how I modified it and stuff, it's, you know, the futility of existence, right? I mean, you're struggling every day to do almost anything in a lot of ways in life. I mean, like some days and some periods, literally anything can seem like a struggle. And even with that, little things can make big things. I think that was like a lot of what a lot of our lyrical angles in the beginning were about, how these, you know, kinds of, maybe again, this came from the context where we're at, where we were from a really DIY background and a really like basement punk, screwed up, kind of weird suburban outsider art weirdo background. And just knowing that that like weird tiny outsider speck can sometimes just punctuate a whole equilibrium and just change the whole picture, I guess is kind of like a driving force for a lot of what we did. I mean, because it isn't necessarily about succeeding per se, or about like glorifying yourself. It's about making a really, really big mess in the way that you want to make that mess, you know? And even if you end up, you know, crumbling into nothingness in the process,
You've done it. You did
something there. So I guess that's, you know, that's where it's at. And also the song, again, like mentioning the band Hickey from Mission Records, like that's a really good example of a band that never got really famous, but has impacted so many people's lives. There are like hundreds of Hickey tattoos, hundreds of like just so many people loved that band and cared about that band. And Matty Love, when he died in 2002, had touched a lot of lives through some really powerful lyrics that dealt with a lot of the same themes. And we just, you know, we always were really inspired by them and by what they did.
Well, before these last two, I just want to say thanks for playing some music for us.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to take you out with Stupid Sun by Hickey and Big Green Teeth by Fleshies. We'll post a link to the Fleshies website, as well as some of the other musical projects that the band members are involved in. You can find that all at kalw.org. Please tune in next week for a new artist, a new set of records, and a new story. It's Liner Notes.
They're sticking to me. Dead mistakes, me for